closer.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Disciplined Investor. And this is Andrew Horowitz. I am your host, and we are back to our traditional episodes where we talk about all things financial. And today we have a special guest who is going to bring us some information on his podcast that is one of the top podcasts in its space. It is called Wall Strip. It is Howard Lindzen, and he is not only a money manager and a hedge fund manager, but he's also the creator. He's also the creative talent, as well as the founder of WallStrip.com. His video podcast, which is a real hoot. You got to listen to it and watch it because they poke some fun at the industry and some of the people in it, as well as give you some great advice on individual stocks utilizing his techniques. WallStrip.com, available on most podcasting directories as well as iTunes. Next week, we have some exciting things coming up. I want to make sure that you know that you should be subscribed to the Disciplined Investor podcast, because some of the things coming up, like our interview with Larry Kudlow, the discussion of the anatomy of a day trade, as well as the picks and pans for the CNBC Market Challenge, are going to be fast and furious next week. So if you haven't subscribed yet and you're just listening to this on the web, make sure to go to your favorite directory and subscribe. What we're going to do is warm up for our guest, who is going to start in about 30 seconds. And in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break to tell you a little bit about the upcoming book I have called The Disciplined Investor, which is going to be on the shelves very shortly. And it's going to tell you some other things that you need to know. And when we come back, we are going to talk directly with Howard Lindzen, the founder of WallStrip.com, the podcast and the blog site.
Did you know that bulls sometimes like the naked option? Bears sometimes buy butterflies. And diamonds are some trader's best friend. And there's nothing so satisfying as when we see our shorts come down. Unless, of course, everyone else has longs and are quickly covering their shorts. Did you ever see hammers with long bodies and short shadows after a shooting star appeared just prior to a dark cloud cover? There have been numerous sightings lately of long collars used upside down, head and shoulders. Sound like gibberish? Well, they're not. These are all real investment terms that you need to know. Learn the lingo and techniques of pro traders before you invest, and you too may even own spiders or even a new convertible. Coming to bookstores everywhere, The Disciplined Investor, the groundbreaking book that gives you professional investment tools page after page. Watch for it in bookstores everywhere.
All right, welcome back. This is Andrew Horowitz, and as I promised, we have our special guest today from Wall Strip, actually the creator of Wall Strip. It's Howard Lindzen. Howard, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
Great. I've been very much attached to your podcast, and it's a video podcast. For those of you out there that don't know about Wall Strip, it is a wonderful kind of a comedic relief parody style, but also a really interesting creative look at the markets from a much different angle than you see it every day on the various television and radio. And I would recommend it very, very strongly. It's on the iTunes network. You could check out Wall Strip's podcast. Howard's the founder. When did you think about this? What was the genesis of this idea to create this?
Well, I've run a failed stand-up comic, but at a very young age, so it didn't really matter. But definitely love writing. Started blogging a year and a half ago. And as I said on other places, there's a void, really. There's just basically one star in the financial space. And if you look at most other verticals, whether it's tech in the blog sphere or entertainment, or politics, boy, it's a crowded space. And there's great stock bloggers for sure. But nobody had really done anything on video other than Kramer on TV. So I felt there was like an opening there. And then I thought we had a unique, or at least I have a unique, not so much trading style, but investing style, which was, buying all-time highs. I have a strategy that buys strength. And I'm a trend follower. And I thought that would appeal to more of the masses. And you know, it's hit or miss. I don't know if people really take the investing style seriously. That's been a mistake for people who haven't.
Right.
I think a lot of our stocks are up huge, and that's, you know, the premise of really the show, but we don't brag about it. It's, you know, in a good market, which you're in most of the time, buying the strongest stocks is the best way to invest.
So why did you take the road to go a little bit more on the side of you know, parody, comedic? I was watching, for example, the recent one that you did a few days back on Crocs, which I thought was great. And I think it was Respironics. Was that the one that that you did? And you were talking about the sleep apnea product and kind of this,
yeah,
this guy walking into bars with the sleep apnea thing, trying to drink a beer and trying to pick up girls with this big, huge headpiece on. I mean, it was hysterical.
Yeah, well, I think we're starting to offend some people, so I guess that's good. The show is definitely made to make people money. Nobody really cares, I guess. They scoff. They want you to discover stocks that are undiscovered, and you know, that's the biggest con game going, is if people could find those stocks, they wouldn't be telling you about them anyways. They'd be retired. So, but that's what investors want. They want low price stocks. They want undiscovered gems. And so I think we're unorthodox from that standpoint. The parody comes in from, you know, nobody knows these great companies. And I find it hysterical that Respironics, which is in a 7-year move, probably going to continue as a stock that people want you to have told it about 5 years ago. They wouldn't have bought it 5 years ago either, saying it had doubled and tripled before that. So the Respironics one comes from me, you know, struggling for years with sleep issues and trying all different types of machines. And for me, you know, it's a seriously serious disease, and I've done a lot of research, which helped me buy the stocks. But at the same time, it's one of the most goofy, doesn't work for me, and it's just really a goofy, uncomfortable machine.
Yeah.
So we were just trying to make light of that. Nobody would obviously carry it around in the street.
Right.
But yet we do.
You know, on the show also, what you're doing is really giving out information. You know, one of the nice things, I do agree with you that there is really only a few different video or even television based people out there giving any advice. I think that I guess the industry has been really shying away from that over the years, and they didn't want any of the liability. They didn't want to really, they didn't understand, I think, the need for it. So you had people in the radios and in every sector buying up time and with no qualification talking about things. And, you know, now I think the evolution has been that people are obviously, you know, they're demanding that they take more. So Cramer comes back. He makes his big comeback after how many years of being shunned by the media because of many of the missteps, let's just say, and issues that were around the early 2000s and late 1990 area. But, you know, now I think that the nice thing about Wall Street is that you give a lot of information. You're not really making any specific judgment calls, though. I don't recall any episodes that you said, hey, this is a buy right now or this is a sell right now.
You know, we did a show on Sirius, and I made fun of it and said, why would any idiot own those stocks? So we're starting to tweak in, you know, Lindsay for sure not, and Adam and Jeff who help write and direct and produce the show, there's no way I would let them, and they understand that even if it comes across as making a recommendation, they always end it with some goofball, or it won't. So the opinion comes from me. You know, I own or don't own the stocks. I disclose them. I write a blog post with each stock with links to more information, because there's definitely something that I feel going on. We'd like to cover we'd like to cover all-time highs as well. I thought it would be a good show because, you know, it's more positive. I mean, you know, the companies have products that are like in the public consciousness.
Yeah.
And you know, you're just fighting less, you know, to own those type of stocks. It's just less aggravating. And I think video on the web, I mean, stocks is a perfect medium for videos on the web. First of all, it's searchable. Second of all, it's archivable. We do one a day, so it's ticker sensitive and searchable by that. So that was all, you know, thought through. And then most importantly, you know, people can, you know, I think less is more. I mean, I think TV is a horrible medium for it because there's no way to go back and, you know, to judge these people based on what they did. But if you're honest in the blogosphere and if you're honest in a video blog, I mean, the stuff's there, very searchable,
right.
And you can be called out. You can be called out on it. So we're trying to be very careful about doing update shows as well.
So how do you get the time to daily? I mean, how long does an episode take to put together? They look pretty, you know, this isn't just, you know, standing in front of a camera and you're, you know, just giving advice. I mean, this is an entire production going on.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. You're right. It's a full show. We do 5 a week. Some shows like the LodgeNet show, which is my favorite, which is a great company. It's a stock that I should own but don't. And I wanted to get, you know, that's 3 years in the making in the sense that I saw Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David, you know, checks out and the woman tells him he owes $1,100 for porn.
Right.
And just a funny episode. And I said, you know, we got to do the same thing where Lindsay, you know, runs up a porn bill on Wall Street.
Right.
And so we put together like a Seinfeld-esque, you know, parody of that show based around a public company, which is doing phenomenally well, which is LodgeNet, which supplies, you know, the TV or the paid television into the rooms. So, I mean, that is like 3 years in a sense, but that took 3 weeks to get all the different shots. You know, what's his name from Fast Money was in the show and he did a cameo, and then we had actors, and then I was in New York. And, you know, so all that stuff is just cut and edited. It's really like a, and then some shows, Lindsay in front of a green screen, just belting through, you know, a well-written thesis of the company.
Right.
So you can range from 1 day to 3 weeks.
Wow, it's amazing. A lot of work. And the payoff's been good so far. I mean, you've been, you know, pretty happy, I think, because I think the reviews are outstanding, and you're at the top or near the top of the iTunes, featured in the iTunes network, which I guess is probably one of the more important ones out there to be involved in. Your blog's getting big hits, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think traffic-wise, the show's probably not where it should be based on its production value. But again, we're just trying to prove out that, you know, cost per episode wise, it's just so much cheaper. I think we're paving the way for a lot of people to realize that, hey, I could go raise $600,000 from some friends to do a movie, or I could go raise $600,000 to go do a year of creative stuff on the web and build a brand.
Right.
And, I mean, that's more of what the goal was. We, you know, it's not a very responsible thing to do with your family's money. I had 11 years experience. I had a lot of contacts, and I was confident that I could do it, but it's not something I would recommend the average person go and do.
Let me switch gears on you for a second, just moving away from the whole production and issues about the show itself, and really talk about some of the market issues that we're dealing with right now. It's been an amazing number of weeks with the market doing some very bizarre things, really starting with the downfall of the China markets in, what, February 28th it was, when we saw that huge decline in the markets and everybody started panicking a little bit, but 3 days later it was a straight shot up. One of my theories these days is that, you know, that generally people like to invest. It doesn't matter where it is. They like to have the opportunity to make money. That's just people. You know, whether it's gambling, whether it's investing, whatever you want to call it. And we've had times over the last 10 years, take the internet and stock boom of the late 1999 or 1998 area. And then we had, obviously, the real estate craze into, I don't know, this last year. My feeling is that it has gotten to a point, obviously, that real estate is no longer a viable investment from the attitude of most individuals, and they're looking for somewhere to put that money, and that the money flow into the markets has a lot to do with that. What do you think about that?
Well, I hate to. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, so that's a short answer. But I spent a little 10 years stressing myself over that before, you know, I got comfortable with just looking at price. You know what I mean? And it's going to offend people like you and the Warren Buffetts of the world, but you know, 99.9% of the public could use my style and then give their money to Buffett for the rest of what they do. And that's not to knock what you or anybody else is doing. It's just that, you know, to me in the investing world, it's price, right? All that really matters is price. And the market is a leading indicator. And so for me to outthink it, I mean, I agree with you. I'm a real estate lender as well. You know, mezzanine, you know, money. My partner lends money. And it doesn't take rocket scientist to believe that just 2 or 3% of the money inflow that's been made there is, you know, finding itself into the stock market, which is huge, huge money. And you know, there's a phenomenon going on right now. It's not like 1999, 2000. There's some real, real strong, steady moves in the markets. Would I put my new money in Brazil or Mexico or China? No, probably wouldn't have put it in there 3 or 4 years ago, if not for being a trend follower. But, you know, I do have a brain, and I just think people that have always been burned investing outside of the U.S. at some point. And I think, you know, from that standpoint, I always believe investing in the U.S. market and buying my exposure through American companies doing business over there.
Sure.
I think you still got a lot of good times ahead. I think there's still a lot of bearishness. I think there's a lot of money flow. I think people are underinvested in the stock market. And, you know, irregardless of prices, which seem high, there's some real moves out there in the drugstore, some of the bigger brands that have been stagnant for the last 5-6 years as well.
Yeah, well, the only thing I think we have against us there, and that's the big issue, is what happens if a Democrat comes in, if they're going to attack it immediately. But that's probably for another debate. One of the things I've been doing is, you know, the CNBC Market Challenge, whether we like it or not, it's a kind of a little fun thing to do because, you know, it's out there. It's being, I think, approached by about 1 million people are in the competition. And I use the style of simply earnings-based picks on a daily basis, looking to find out where the breakout is and things that have been either oversold or seemingly at their price tops. And in the last, I think, 6 weeks, we're up about 60% on a very, very simple strategy. So I agree with you that there are amazing opportunities. But still, at the same time, I question some of these humongous daily moves. I mean, look at what happened on the overnight of Amazon or Apple, or, you know, look at some of these huge numbers. I mean, you think these are warranted at that level?
Well, here's another point. Like, Amazon to me is just noise. I mean, in my world, that stock's got to go above 100 before it would even be on my radar screen. So whether it moves from 40 to 60 or 60 to 40, it just doesn't affect my world because it's not on my radar screen. Mm-hmm. Apple was surprising. Apple was surprising because I wrote about it and I own it, and it was surprising to see that big of a move after such a big move anyways. I mean, the stock is so watched right now. Amazon wasn't, and that's why it had such a big move. But Apple's just so widely watched to have that big a move was surprising. But you can see from it pulling back immediately is that it's an overtraded stock. It's overowned. And the moves, you know, I think near the end of cycles, I'm not betting when Apple will end or not because that's not what I do, but it just feels like, you know, stocks like that are near the end of the moves, not near the beginning. But, you know, I'm not definitely not selling because of that.
Right. I still tend to believe that Apple, though, when you look at some of these things, I think that people, and when you see it, particularly such a bold move in the after hours markets, it signals to me that there's a lot of people trying to hop on a train real quick. Because they, and again, you know, the whole behavioral finance behind it, you know, that they've really been either out of the market or burned and they need to get it back. And they want to, you know, get that stock back because they should have owned it. And they just do irrational things, kind of like a short cover, you know, a run to make sure that you don't get hurt too badly, or at least that you can catch that train.
Yeah. I agree, but then I looked at the numbers, you know, because I rarely look at the numbers, but I looked at the numbers and they were staggering. I mean, it's from someone who shops at the Apple store once a week and knows, and that's why I own the stock. I see the traffic. They still were staggering numbers, numbers that I wouldn't have, you know, in a slow quarter bet on. So if the numbers are real, and who even knows about that, those were seriously, you know, there are a lot of people short that stock, and I don't know why, but they are for their reasons. And they just got their asses handed to them by a stock that just blew away numbers, right, even after it's been doing that for 4 years.
Listen, so, I've been a guy that has been a Windows guy due to business for many, many years, and I finally bought my first MacBook. And it is smooth running. I got to tell you, it's a beautiful thing. And I've been to the Apple stores myself a number of times. And I got to tell you, you have to push people out of the way to get to where you want to go.
Yeah, and they're going to have their hiccups. I've always thought that. They had one last summer. I bought a little down in the low 50s. I remember blogging about it. And, you know, the machines run hot. nothing's perfect. I'm surprised they've been able to execute this long.
Yeah.
It's why I don't think anymore. I just, you know, I'm willing to ride a stock down 15 points and get stopped out versus trying to pick the top, because over time, I'm looking for the, you know, the CMEs and the Apples that just go up, you know, 1,000% and not get stopped out after a 6 or 7% move.
Right.
So I expect fully that I just am surprised that they've been able to execute this well. And I think a lot of shorts just were betting the same way that I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And that's like, oh, man, they can't just keep growing on top of that base.
Sure. But let me give you a quick note. I just got a hit on my screen that Crocs is surging today, up another $1.16. Challenging its April high of 55. So just a point to make you happy. That was only, what, maybe a week ago, the show or so, I got on Crocs.
Yeah, we actually, that was a redo of a show that we did in our first week when the stock was in the 30s. And Crocs is just an example of a product, and what Wall Street tries to do is look at, yeah, I remember Motley Fool being short the stock at 29, and it just said, you know, it's irresponsible for a guy who doesn't own or is not short the stock to write such a scathing article and not have his money where his mouth is. And I remember doing the show at 36 and going, people are just going to just laugh. And sure enough, the first time we ran the show back in October, the comments were like, you're an idiot. And here we are at 55. And I'm not saying it's a buy or a sell. I'm just saying, you know, that's a phenomenon. The company is overvalued for sure. But who's to say what they do with that distribution that they've created? And,
yeah.
And I'm not saying you should. And so I just don't understand why people like to bet against companies that are in the public consciousness, that have a massive amount of distribution. And I don't think we have the knowledge to predict whether a management that executed so flawlessly is just going to screw it up.
Yep. Well, you know, I know you have a limited amount of time, and we're going to just two more points. Number one, obviously, it sounds a little bit Peter Lynch-esque about, you know, in the public eye, utilizing what people are doing, you know, looking around at you as at the most obvious that's right in front of your nose. And sometimes we, even looking for it on an active basis, I know myself, I sometimes, you know, give me the old knock in the head saying, oh, my God, that was right in front of me the whole time. You know, where was I on that one? And, you know, just so what I do is I enlist my family, frankly. I have three kids and a wife, and I ask them constantly what's going on out there to make sure that I'm not missing anything, which I'm sure is something you do as well.
I agree with that style. I disagree with Peter Lynch on one thing, and maybe I don't really follow him or didn't follow him, is that, you know, just buying what you know seems kind of just a little loose. I do like to scan. I mean, I buy only all-time highs, right?
Right.
And it's not like I'm chasing all-time highs that are 60% above their breakout point. I'm looking for stocks as they approach all-time highs. I monitor them. I run software that tracks stocks. And, you know, it's for me, if it's really going to be a position, I got to understand it. Secondly, the price has to be doing something that indicates that it's not just a great product, but that it's actually being consumed on massive quantities. And then thirdly, you have to keep an eye on these things.
Right.
So Peter Lynch is a little simplistic. I like Peter Lynch's attitude, you know, walking the mall and understanding. But then you got to really check the company. And the web now with Flickr and YouTube and Delicious and all kinds of social networking tools really allows you to do some different type of research and check out what people are really talking about in the social network.
Right. All right, two other points. Maybe in the future I could recommend a show on the Motley Fool. I don't think you've done a parody on them. I think probably, talking about their amazing performance, AOL, how they've just made an unbelievable amount of money on stocks, primarily AOL, when it first came out, and then the incredible amount of growth that they've had as a media source, but also maybe on – I don't think you've done one on Alan Greenspan, have you?
No, we haven't done one on Alan Greenspan. That would actually be kind of funny. I actually have met Tom at the Motley Fool, and he's really, really smart. They built a tremendous media company around.
Amazing.
It's just an amazing group of people. So actually, I was a subscriber. I think, you know, there's certain things that I don't like about it, and I don't subscribe anymore. But I do think as a media organization, they've done a great job.
Yeah.
And their main portfolio. It was a very interesting portfolio.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, I think the Greenspan, I agree too. I mean, there's a lot you could do there. And I wish you luck, and I hope to see the continuation of your success and the continuation of some just really, I think personally, one of the bravest and the one of the best ways to look at business from a different angle these days is to check out Wall Strip. You can go to wallstrip.com and it will bring you right to Howard's blog, as well as it will bring you to links so that you can subscribe to the podcast or just go to the iTunes network, and he's right all over the business and the investing area. So Howard, I wish you luck.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out. I think we really appreciate it. There is a new show that's coming out in the next couple of months. It's hysterical. It's going to be a really raw look at the trading desks. So it'll give a little more meat for people that want to trade, but also a daily parody of Wall Street. So keep your eyes open for that.
Great.
And I really appreciate the kudos. I mean, we do appreciate it. That's why we're doing it. And it feels good to have someone appreciate us. Thanks much.
I'm there. Thanks a lot. Remember that we're going to be talking a lot about technical analysis as well as the anatomy of a trade coming up. The incredible amount of great shows that we have coming up. Please do me a favor. Make sure that you are subscribed. Don't just listen to each episode. Make sure you subscribe and get automatic downloads. Do me one more favor and provide a review on iTunes. That's how we keep the show going. And I thank you and want to tell you that I wish you great investing. Have a great day. Have a successful day. I'll see you tomorrow.
If you like what you hear, we want to know. Go to our show's listing on either iTunes or your favorite podcast directory and leave us feedback and a rating. The more feedback we have, the higher our position on the charts. Think of it as the price of admission. It only takes a minute and helps us understand more about what interests you. Keep our blog and podcast popular, and we'll keep providing you with great investment ideas. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.